Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. It's hard to start a meditation without a meditation, isn't it? So I think at least a symbolic meditation I had to do. Short, but potent. Because Om is including everything. Om is the mantra, or the mula mantra, a root mantra, that includes not only the entire universe, but that includes also the origin of the universe. It includes both the spiritual and the material worlds. In that way, Om includes everything. It includes all living beings. It includes matter and spirit. Namo means Na is a negation. Na is a negation, means not. Namaha. Not the sense of myself being the possessor. Namaha. Not me, the controller. Not me, the owner. Not me, the Lord. Not me, the center of the universe. Not me. Bhagavate. Anything related to the Supreme Lord. So approaching all that exists, but not through myself, but approaching the Supreme Lord. Putting Him in the center. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya, the one who is in pure transcendental goodness, who is not afflicted by the energies surrounding him of this world. Just like he may feel different downtown than in the forest. In the forest, so peaceful, just really you become calm and relaxed. In the city, traffic moving, people moving, different atmosphere, passion. We are alert, you know, anything can come any moment from any side, you know, look left, look right. It's a reflex, it's normal. Check your phone, quick. The fast culture, fast food, fast moving, passion. So in this way, consciousness is the key to our perception. Meditation and consciousness cannot be separated, because it is the consciousness is our tool through which we meditate. And yes, depending on the state of that consciousness, just as different places have different qualities. Different places can be in goodness, the forest. Different places can be in passion, the city. Or different places can be in ignorance, maybe a bar. In this way, places of ignorance make us forget anything more than the moment. just the moment is all there is. And that is not beneficial for meditation, because meditation is not only about the moment. Of course, I remember in the 60s, there was Richard Alpert, also known as Ram Dass Bono, who coined the phrase, be here now. Be here now. And be here now became a big slogan throughout the 60s and 70s, and was like something brought back from India, which gave a key to how to live or how to meditate. Simply be there fully in every moment and experience it. Yes, but that's not all. That's not all. It's just as when we climb a mountain, certainly, with each movement, we want to pay attention, because after all, if you don't, you could go down really quick. So definitely be here now as we're climbing the mountain, for sure. Right? You're not gonna sort of be with the head in the clouds. Well, maybe if you're very high, but in principle, we're climbing up the mountain and paying attention. Still, we also have an idea of the whole route we're going. No one climbs a large mountain without first having some idea what way you're going to go. So, some sense of the whole distance we're going. So be here now, yes, apply ourselves, do everything mindful, don't be simply mechanical, do everything with the heart, mindful. In scriptures it is said the mind and the focus of the mind and the focus of the heart is the same. Wherever the heart is, that's where the mind will go. The mind follows the heart. Wherever our heart is, that's what we'll think about. Thinking, feeling and willing are the functions of the mind. Sankalpa vikalpa. Accepting, rejecting. Accepting, rejecting. Shall I take this? No. That? Yes. Sankalpa vikalpa. So, in this way, our meditation continues. We are conscious. We're trying to focus on the present, and at the same time, keeping a long-term goal in mind. Then, our meditation is properly designed. Meditation doesn't just mean make the mind empty. Making the mind empty, alright. When the mind is overfull, when you have too much baggage, when it is too much that we are carrying from so many different experiences, which do not leave us, so many things that are still with us. All right. Then, free the mind from those things that is required. But that's not the all in all. Then, when the mind is free, make the positive connection. Then, when we leave the negative, then embrace happiness, the next stage. In other words, not just leave the negative, but go forward to the positive. That is complete meditation. Some meditation techniques are only looking at freeing the mind from the negative. But that's obviously not everything. Now, say, in your house, you have a lot of things that are a lot of rubbish. Okay, it's time to throw out the rubbish in your apartment. So you clean it out, you go in there with a gas mask and rubber gloves and lots of plastic bags, and you shovel it all out. Great, you've done a wonderful job. Now scrub it down and spick and span beautiful apartment. Now it's clean. And then what? Nice. No more rubbish. I'm so happy for a day, but now we want something positive in the apartment. Bring in the positive. So the same in our meditation. When we think of meditation, we think of a space. And that space, first we free it from unwanted things, anarthas. Anarthas, artha means benefit, anartha means what doesn't bring benefit. So get rid of all the things that don't bring benefit, and then fill that space with something positive, with many positive, inspiring elements. That is where bhakti comes in. Bhakti focuses on the positive. You see, bhakti says, we can spend ages and ages and ages freeing ourselves from all kinds of negative influences that internally are there in our consciousness. We spend a long time with that, conquering lust, greed, anger, illusion, madness, and envy. All these things are harassing us. Fear. Anxiety. Okay, I can go on with a list of negative emotions, but just to name a few of things that we can carry in our consciousness. So, alright, we want to leave those things. But, that's not enough. They must go further. We must go forward to the positive, to positive consciousness, yes, to uplifting ourselves. Then what? So bhakti, bhakti is focusing on that, and bhakti is saying the consciousness is in its polluted state, like a glass of water with ink inside. And what to do? How to get the ink out? Simple. Just pour more water. And if you keep on pouring water, eventually all the ink will disappear. It will take time. So in other words, rather than focusing on freeing ourselves from negative, keep on pouring positive into the consciousness. And gradually, the negative will be washed away by all that positive energy coming in. That is the approach of bhakti. And that way, we meditate. The mantra, the Maha Mantra, is our connection. The Maha Mantra is our principal tool. It is there where we connect, because it is pure and spiritual. It is Krishna, the all-attractive, no different from Him. So many things are attractive. Jewels, beauty, power, fame, all these qualities are attracting, even renunciation is attracting. Someone who's aloof, that is attractive. In this way, we find attraction everywhere. But nowhere we find these qualities in the same force as within the Divine Supreme Personality. Therefore, he's known as Krishna, all objective. Many names. I also have many names. I have a name on my passport. I have then I have my Swami name. Many names I have. Over the years, I picked up many names. People sometimes are more than one name. Because names are not just something people give us, but names have something to do with who we are. Like, years ago I went to the Tibetans and they gave me a name. And the name they gave me was like, meant that one who will be successful in what he undertakes. That's a name. So names carry a quality. Therefore, when we meditate on the absolute truth, then we find that there are qualities. And so these qualities can be expressed in different ways. Different traditions in the world have tried to capture spirit. Some have meditated and said, matter is all that is. Okay. But then, people like myself become frustrated. If matter is all that is, then I think, but matter has limitations. Then I didn't find fulfillment with that. Spirit is free from limitation. Spirit is always, is ever-growing happiness. Eternally. There's no limit. There's no limit. So that appeals to me. That there is no limit to happiness. In this world, we can start relationships, and all these relationships are limited in different ways. Can drive in a fast car, but how fast can I drive? There's a limit. I can dance all night, but can I dance beyond that? You know, the next morning, I'm going to crash. Right? I can eat, not so long. I eat very fast, actually. And then I'm full already. So, everything limited material. I can have certain things. I can be rich, but can I own the whole world? So, limited. Everything limited. So, material things are limited. But my desire seems to be always greater than what I get. That's one of the issues of material life. That's the source of frustration. When, you know, you have everything and then you have these moments where you go like, there's always something more to desire, to dream. The dream goes beyond the reality. That's matter. Spirit is the opposite. Spirit is where reality goes beyond the dream. You dream the greatest you can dream, and then the reality is greater than that. It exceeds expectations. So meditation is meant to break through from the material platform to the spiritual platform, to that platform which exceeds all our expectations. Our aim is to be ultra positive. as I said, it is a space, and we are filling it and building our meditation. We are now starting again. We grew up, and they filled our consciousness to planting it on so many of these things. Oh my God, do I have to learn this? I don't want to sit still, stop playing, pay attention. Then, you know, then newspapers and the internet, and we drink it in. We download it ourselves. And we have constructed a consciousness with the help of others, with the help of the environment. It has been built, and we ourselves have added to it in so many ways. And here it is. Now we start again. We leave that old consciousness. Only what is useful will keep. We go forward now to a new state of being. This time, only positive elements will go in. Nothing else. Only positive values. Happiness must be there in our consciousness, because the soul is anandamayam-vyasat, it is said in the Vedanta, where it is said in the Vedanta Sutra that the soul is by nature pleasure-seeking, that we are experiencing. Now, we are all looking for pleasure, but, you know, we find that we're not the only ones, and sometimes we want the same things that our neighbor wants, and then what do you do? Just an elbow at a convenient moment. And get up front of the pack. Got it. I've got the happiness. Now, that's not ultra-positive. That is mixed. There's positive mixed with negativity. No, that doesn't fit. Therefore, the only thing that will fit in our meditation is happiness that will include the happiness of all others. Then it's complete. So not only my happiness, everybody's happiness. Now, that's not simple, yeah, but still, that's noble. If the meditation is not noble, then what is the point? It must be noble. It cannot be selfish, because selfish means at the expense of others. Like this, we must embrace values. And the principle that giving is higher than taking or receiving. And by giving, one will receive more than by taking. That principle, again, another value we can place within our meditation. We see many examples of that. A mother's love, you know. You see kind of movies, and the big ship is sinking, and the sailor is going down, and before he sinks, the last words are, "Mommy." Because, she's done everything for him. As he would. He made it so tough. But yet, there is a soft spot in that man that is so tough and so hard in so many ways, cannot find a soft moment in him. He swears, he's rough as guts, right? But when it comes to mom, he's a pussycat. Suddenly, that lion of a man has turned into a pussycat. Because she has selflessly given and sacrificed. It's greater just giving for the benefit of others, not considering one's own, is greater than considering what's in it for me. So this value must be there in our meditation. Our meditation must include everything. Our meditation must include the place where we live. We cannot live in a place of insanity. The place where we live has to be a place which is nourishing. Otherwise, what's the point? Why live somewhere if it is not nourishing us? Don't live there. Don't live in a place that drains us, that takes away our energy. Live in a place that gives strength. We must create it. It is within our meditation. Now, our meditation must include trust. Where there's no trust, there's fear. There will be fear, constant fear, no trust. So trust must be there. But how can one trust if one is not trustworthy? First, we must be trustworthy. Then there can be trust. Otherwise, there will never be trust. It begins with us, that we are trustworthy. So integrity must be there. Whatever we say, we live up to. Keep our word. All such values must be there in our meditation. Meditation depends on values. Everyone is meditating. A cold-hearted, ruthless businessman is meditating day and night. A prophet, intense meditation, but not a good one. So, not very mindful, not understand. He's blinded by the glitter of gold, but he does not understand. He's seeing the moment, the money now, but he's not seeing the long term. He doesn't see that money doesn't stay. Money is like water, which you capture in your hands. You can't keep it, it will run away through the openings between your fingers. Who has ever been able to keep money? No one. Money moves. It's with you now, will be with someone else later. So, therefore, in our meditation, money doesn't play a major role. It's seen as something that comes and goes. Some arrangements are made for it, but it is understood to be what it is, a temporary commodity. And all temporary commodities are in the background in our meditation. They cannot be in the foreground. The foreground is reserved for what will last. That is meditation. Because only what will last makes sense to give a real focus. Sometimes for a little while you can focus on temporary things, on money, making money. But if that's all you think of, then it's seriously wrong meditation. In this way, we are slowly determining our objective little by little, and painting some values and placing some values in the space of our meditation and building it up. So from this, of course, it could go on and on. I could put more and more things into a meditation and this way build it up. But I'm leaving that to you, to your creativity, as I'm doing it for myself. When meditation is a mental exercise, that's not good enough. When we sit and control the mind, that's good, but not good enough. Why? Because I said earlier that the mind follows the heart, whatever's in the heart. So no matter how we control the mind, we can breathe through pranayama, slowly inwards, slowly out through the right nostril, and cool the body through the left nostril, breathing in, bringing heat. We can do and affect the mind, calm the mind. All these things are possible. But we cannot focus the mind. Not permanently. We can focus for some time. We can sit silently and just fix our mind. That we can do. But sooner or later, we get out of that state of focus, and then the mind will return to where the heart is. Because that's the point where the mind always returns to wherever the heart is. Therefore, to just fix the mind is not enough. We must fix the heart. When we fix the heart, then mind automatically becomes fixed. Therefore, real in-depth meditation needs to fix the heart. How to fix the heart? So the heart is such a thing, it does what it wants. Today it loves this, tomorrow it loves that, and you know, how can you how can you control it? Great. This is a smoothie. And it's good stuff. Talking about meditation. I will come with the love. Anyway, so the heart, I'm trying to fix the heart. The heart may be here, may be there. Love you today, tomorrow, sorry, just don't love you anymore. Eh? What to do? Something is gone. You know? I mean, play some bluesy chords and or whatever, minors, you know. Well, my love is gone. Out of the window. It flew away early in the morning, never to return. A string is broken. So, but the heart is to be attracted. Love will follow. When we are attracted, when we admire, when we see amazing qualities, when we see a wonderful nature, when we see mercy, kindness, compassion,
when we see strength, when we see beauty, love will follow. Love will follow naturally. Love cannot be pushed. Cannot. You know, you have to love. You have to love your country. Well, I don't. I'm sorry. I like it, but love it. In Sydney, there's this Anzac memorial. It says the greatest good a man can do is to give his life for his country. And when I read that, I'm thinking, well, I'm not so sure. I don't know. I'm not convinced about that. Sorry about that. Love you. Love you a lot. But not that much. Sorry. I mean, when the war comes, if possible, I'll go somewhere else before it gets too hot. You know what I mean? Yes, so love, where it will go. But love will go where there's admiration, where we see great qualities, where we see great kindness, great compassion, mercy, determination, where we see an incredible example, where we see someone who is just greater than we are, who can, then love will automatically awaken. It's not difficult. Love will come there. So then comes comes in meditation, comes the question, is everything just a product of chance, or is it intelligent design? And when you get to that point, the intelligent design question, then you come to that point. If there is intelligent design, then is there a higher plan? Is there a higher purpose? Is there a deeper meaning? Is there destiny? If there's no higher plan, then there's no destiny. Then you just, do as you feel, do as you like, and take it as it comes. It's all right. But is it? It's supposed to be all right, but it's not always all right. Years ago, I came home. I was living with my girlfriend, and suddenly she's there with my best friend. And then they both tell me that between them, some incredible vibrations were just going on, and that I just walked in at the wrong moment. So if I could please go. It was about midnight. So I was walking on the street at midnight, not feeling very happy. Best friend, is my best friend, with my girlfriend, and they're having good vibrations, and they don't need me. I wasn't what you call in ecstasy about it. So I roamed the streets, and there was this big garbage can. And just to sort of relieve the stress a little bit, I kicked over the garbage can, which, I've actually never done anything stupid like that, but this time I did. I kicked it over. It took 30 seconds for the cops to arrive. That was really quick. That was fast, 30 seconds. I was impressed. I didn't think they could be that fast, but they were. 30 seconds, guns, the whole thing, arrested. Then, that's serious. And I spent the night in jail while my best friend, not my girlfriend. And it's all right, it's all right. Wasn't that much all right. I tell you, my best friend wasn't my best friend anymore. Another one.
So,
it's about being, it's about sensitivity in relationships. So relationships come in the picture, in our meditation. Relationships with people. Let us be sensitive, but are others going to be sensitive to me? I don't know. The question comes. The God question. Well, that everyone has to figure out for himself. For me, that question, somewhere in India, came to the foreground. Because in the Netherlands, where I'm from, especially in the vicinity of Amsterdam, where I grew up, no one had any time for that question. The real question was, how to get the money? And, you know, people were very busy with that. But India, very different. In India, it was the Ganges, and the banks of the river filled with temples, and people sitting there doing rituals and praying, and at night, a husband and wife would come and would put a little boat made of leaves with flowers inside, and a little lamp, and they would offer it in the river, and it would float away, and 100 such lamps were glowing in the dark. And then a wooden boat would come with people singing religious songs. There in India, you know, I mean, call the question, you know. Well, I mean, they put it in your face so that, you know, bells are ringing. 3 in the morning, I was sleeping in Benares on the roof of the house, and suddenly this incredible noise. Bow, 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 bow. Really loud, and then mantras, blasting to its Indian loudspeakers, which are inconceivably loud. I mean, it's like not designed for the human ear, if you know what I mean. Just like monsters of things, you know. It's just sitting up and gone. Years ago, it brought me beyond my limits. But after a while, I found out more about it, and I found out that people were just rising at 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock. Middle of the night, 3 o'clock, to go to a cold river, to take a dip. You guys are kidding me. Roll over, you know. Come on, you know. 3 o'clock, go away. But no, every day the same ritual, and they would be there. And after I got over the initial shock and my initial condemnation and writing it off as insane, well, I had to sort of give it to them. These people have an incredible conviction. Incredible. And inconceivable. What they're doing, you know, how can they do it?
Impressive, I must say. I was impressed. Although I moved to another place where the loudspeaker was further away. You know, having the best of both worlds, you know what I mean? But it brought out the God question to me. And I started to think about it. I thought, well, maybe there is. Anyway, I decided that I would venture on some meditation. So I sat on the bank of the Ganga in the evening, cross-legged, on earth. Above me, sky. In front of me, water. Just on the other side, I saw fire as well. Various elements are there. I was in my element. Very ready
for meditation. And I was going deep, deep, deep in concentration, and then in due course of time, I heard a sound. Husky dogs. Millions of them, mozzies all over the place, you know, my God, you know. I mean, that was the end of all meditation. That was quick and easy, finished. Then, next, you know, I decided to meditate during the day, and I sat down, hot or not, right? Oh, I was dripping in sweat, but meditating, and looking at one point in the river. And for about 45 minutes, I stared at this one point in the River Ganga, and then, believe it or not, but it's true, you know, just then, from my spot, a dolphin jumped out. Yay! I'm, you know, perfection of yoga, you know. Dolphins, eh? Jumping out there, feeling good. So, you know, that's the whole thing, eh? Anyway, okay, I saw a dolphin and I was elated for a day. And then, you know, I was sort of thinking, yeah, but what does it mean, you know? A fish is just a fish, you know. A fishy thing, you know. Dolphins, nice fish, but still, you know. What am I supposed to make of this? So, with all my meditation, I couldn't figure it out. Power, mystic power. Is that it? Is that the goal of yoga? Yes. Just on Facebook, I saw this picture floating around lately of one boy who's sitting on the ground and he holds a rope, and then there's a second guy sitting in the air. Have you seen the picture also? He's like floating in the air, and the other guy holds him on a string, like as if he's like a balloon or something. And then you see someone, there's a video clip of it, and someone is putting his hand under the floating guy. Nothing in between. I don't know. Photoshop or whatever, you know, whatever software did that. But I've seen yogis in the Kumbh Mela with their head in the ground, head dug in the ground. I've seen. Now, I mean, when you see a yogi with his head dug in the ground, I thought about it. There are basically three options. Number one, he's dead. Number two, he has an oxygen bottle under the ground. Yeah? And in this way, he's still alive. Or number three, he's alive and he's got mystic power. Yeah? And is doing an ostrich asana or something like that. You know? Yogi. I mean, I've heard of the Mayur Asana, the peacock, but this must be the ostrich, right? Not a common one, but you can see in Kumbh Mela. Yeah, I've seen it with my own eyes. So, mystic power is there, but then what? Then what? What do you do with it? What when you have mystic power? What are you going to do next? Is that it? I can walk through the wall. Well, I can also go through the door. In the end, you know, okay. You may get it a bit quicker, okay. The door works, you know, that's right. All that meditation, just to be able to walk through walls, I mean, too much trouble, you know. Anything else? Walking on water, I can swim, you know. What's the difference, man? I like swimming, you know. Yeah, walking, swimming. We both get to the other side, right? Big deal. So all this stuff like mystic power, what do you do with it? Is that a goal? No, can't see. But then, when we see that, the goal of meditation is to lift the consciousness, to develop love. Love for what? Love for everybody, yes, good. Love for the world, yes. Love for God, love for God, which includes everything else. That's it. That's Bhagavad Gita. Aham Sarva Shri Prabhu, Matasaram Pravartite Iti Matavajanteva Unabhavasamangita. It is said, I am the source of everything spiritual and material. The wise who know this perfectly worship me with love. That's it. If one is really a Buddha, then one worships God with love, and not only him, but also his creation. Then you have all the living beings. Then you have the earth, the environment problem solved. Right? I had to be there in our meditation. Clean earth. Right? So then it's all included. All inclusive. Love God and his creation. Everything. Simple as that. So that's the crown jewel in our meditation. And everything else, all the good values that I spoke about before, they simply are the servant of that ultimate crown jewel. And that crown jewel, yes, Bhagavad Gita calls Krishna the all-attractive. So at the very top, there is Krishna. And we are connecting by offering all these values and offering all our energy for that, for the good of all, for the good of the planet, for the good of mankind, for the good of all the animals, for the good of the plants, for the good of all that lives, and also for the good of all that doesn't live. And ultimately, for the pleasure of the Lord, then, which includes the pleasure of all, because he is the well-wisher of all living beings, like a parent. Just like if someone has a child, if I am the well-wisher of the parent, then automatically also become the well-wisher of the child. That's included because they're a unit, they're together. There's no way that you can single out only the parent. I'm the well-wisher of the parent, but I kick your child. See what the parent will do to you. Yeah? That doesn't work. So, love of God is brilliant because it includes everything else. So this wisdom I found in Bhagavad Gita after I returned from India, and I was reading the book, and I was thinking to myself, yeah, this is right. I know all this while I still was smoking cigarettes and blowing rings through rings. Thinking, yeah, I know all this. Now I've thrown away the cigarettes. Now I'm trying to live by the Gita. Now I think, I don't know too much about it, but if I keep on trying to adjust my life deeper to this knowledge, then surely one day my heart will fill with pure and unalloyed love. Unalloyed love. Oh, and that day will come. That will be the perfection of all meditation. Okay, that was my talk. I'll finish my smoothie before it goes black. But if anybody would like to respond to any question or comment, that's nice. That would be nice. Either in agreement or disagreement, all is good. Ah, good. Yeah. New CDs, hot in the press, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. It just came. Oh, yeah. Good. Did a decent job.
Press the middle. turn it properly. No, I'm going to put it in. Let's put the head up.
Oh, okay. Like that?
Yeah. No, it's good.
Okay. I make CDs for people's pleasure to offer them a meditation. At the same time, I sell them to raise money also for which I use to help devotees in Africa who have no money. And at the moment I'm sponsoring some students who study in the college. And like that, I'm trying to do two things at the same time.
Yeah, it's good. Colors came out. Yeah.
Cover is nice, music is terrible, but it's for a good cause. Any questions? Any comments?
Any questions? Hmm. When you're starting to develop love for God and Krishna, how would you go about that, to think about Krishna, God, to develop love when the material world and what we see is what we get is what we have grown up to, mm-hmm. to believe in?
Right. Well, I described the meditation, right? And I said in the beginning we have to free our mind from many negative things and so on. And there are meditation techniques that just focus on that, you know, freeing the mind from negative things. In bhakti yoga, we don't do that so much. It's like a glass of water with some ink, and you keep on pouring more water, so you put in the positive energy. Then it's said somewhere in the middle that the Maha Mantra is our main tool for doing that. And that's really how we do it. It's simply by the mantra meditation, bringing in the mantra, that this process takes place of the consciousness becoming automatically purified from all these negativities, like I listed some, greed, anger, envy, and so on. And gradually we develop attachment to positive values and ultimately to Krishna, to the Supreme Lord. So that's how our love of God will develop. Simply by mantra meditation. That's our main tool. And then next to that, you try and take the rubbish out of your life. You know, some people, they chant mantra, but they bring in a lot of rubbish to the back door at the same time. If you chant a lot of mantra and then you will shoot some heroin, don't expect that the mantra is going to work. You know, it's not going to produce great results for you, and unfortunately. So it does require a lifestyle that supports the mantra chant. And otherwise, so all yoga, whether it's hatha yoga, whatever yoga, including bhakti yoga, require a lifestyle which supports. But in bhakti yoga, the essence is the mantra chant.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the question. Good question.
Okay, yeah. Something there.
Why the Gita? Why not the Quran or the Bible or any of the
other? Yeah, you can take the Quran and the Bible. I read those also. I read the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Egyptian one, the I Ching, the Bible, the Quran, and many other scriptures and books. And in all of them I found something. I did. But ultimately I found that in most scriptures the goal remained, was clearly defined as God. But then it remained obscure, not very a burning bush, you know,
a burning bush, but not much more. Whereas the Vedas and the Bhagavad Gita is a summary of the Vedas. The Vedas are much more detailed, you see. So much more detailed. So, therefore, I found more satisfaction in the Gita, personally. That's why I'm sitting here in sort of, well, imitation Vedic dress, you know, in a color which I like to call saffron. But if it's not saffron, it's orange. And since I'm Dutch, at least that's the problem. Nobody can argue against it. Orange. In the Netherlands, the color orange stands for freedom. The House of Orange, the royalty. They were the freedom fighters. Therefore, orange still stands for freedom. And every year we have a big party and everyone dresses up in orange. And we're all into freedom. And the tradition is still going strong. But how do you get freedom? So anyway, I found that the Bhagavad Gita, or the Vedic knowledge, and the Bhagavad Gita is a summary thereof, gave the deepest answers. So I chose the Bhagavad Gita. Someone else may choose another way. That's also okay.
Preferred language,
the
chanting?
Read the Quran or the Bible.
Just put it somewhere. Anyway, preferred language too. Well, each language. Languages belong to different communities, isn't it? You know, it's like Australian. Australian is a lingo. So there are many languages in the world, and each of them belong to a culture and consciousness. Just read an article about dolphins having a language, and so on. A study on dolphin language, and someone who's trying to translate it. Fine, hasn't come to it yet, but eventually, by a computer, someone is trying to speak with dolphins. So language is there, in the world, animals, human beings, someone's language. But also, all the language is time-bound. Sanskrit, say the Vedic literature, is Devanagari, or is a language that is also spoken in higher regions of the universe and even in spiritual realms. That language exists. Therefore, the Sanskrit sound is full of potency. It has carried spiritual potency, which you will not find in mundane sound. Mundane sound is carrying something, but it's not complete. That's so according to the Vedas, yes, one should chant the mantras in a particular language, Sanskrit, to get the full benefit. And if you chant a translation, it's not the same. You come close to it. Yeah, you know, they're just like, you know, we have an apple, right, or an apple pie, let's say apple pie, or we have Apfelstrudel, yeah, isn't the same, you know, apple pie, or Apfelstrudel, yeah, I'm not sure, or beignet de pain, yeah, so beignet de pain, we can also have, we can have Apfelstrudel, yeah? What would you prefer? Would you like some Apfelstrudel today? Or some beignet de pain? Or just an apple pie?
Tarte aux pommes.
She goes for the pomme. Hein?
Tarte aux pommes,
et c'est une possibilité. Mais j'ai aussi traduit strudel, et donc c'est pas exactement tarte comme ça. De strudel, j'ai arrivé à peigner. Créatif. Gâteau. Le gâteau.
Yeah. Whatever. But the principle of variety of language, it sounds very different, and it's the same thing. Right?
But Sanskrit is the root language, which comes from the spiritual platform. You are French?
Canadian.
Huh?
French-Canadian.
She's Dutch.
Dutch. Hello.
Hello.
From where?
Zwolle.
Mm.
And you?
Heemstede.
Sorry?
Heemstede, about Ireland.
Okay.
Mm.
We'll have
Kirsan next.
But first I just wanted to introduce the CD, make sure that people buy it.
Okay.
Can I do it?
Go for it. Thank you very much.